The Tom Woods Show, episode 977.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you're like me, you were a victim of educational malpractice when you were in school. Well, learn the history and economics they didn't teach you at mylibertyclassroom.com. And save yourself some smackers by checking out my coupon page, libertyclassroom.com/coupons. Hello, everybody. Tom Woods here. Paul Gottfried's with us again. Just want to talk, just see where the conversation goes about what's going on in America today in the wake of Charlottesville, but in particular about the left, the right, conservatives, the fractured right, alt-right, I mean, just whatever comes up. I just thought we're just going to get Paul Gottfried on. I'm going to start talking to him and we'll just see where this goes. Paul has been on the show a number of times up to now. He holds a PhD in history from Yale University. He's the author of many books. I'll have several of them linked at tomwoods.com/977. He's also a Guggenheim recipient and professor emeritus of humanities at Elizabethtown College. Paul, welcome back.
Thank you for having me again.
You bear a tremendous responsibility, Paul. You are the person I go to for sanity in crazy times.
Well, thank you.
All right. So the whole situation right now is very volatile, and I'm not super optimistic about really anything. I'm not optimistic about any aspect of the right now, which is a complete mess. Mm-hmm. The left is much better organized, and the right, white nationalism is not about to take over the right. If you're going to so-called unite the right, it's not going to be on that principle. That is just a fact, even though the hysterics on the left think that's on the verge of happening, or they think they think every Republican, basically, is a white nationalist. I don't understand what world they inhabit. That is the last thing these people are. But we were talking before we went on about what you were saying with regard to the conservative movement and its strategy of triangulation. I'd like you to elaborate on that.
Yeah, it suddenly dawned on me after writing on the American conservative movement since the 1980s that at least since the time that the neoconservatives took over the American right, and perhaps possibly even going back to the time when Bill Buckley created his own version of the American right back in the 1950s, there's been a tendency among the members or leaders of the establishment right to exclude everybody to the right of themselves, attack them as fascist or anti-Semites, even if they threw them out of the conservative movement for other reasons. And at the same time, try to build sort of respectable or amicable relations with the center left. At the same time, of course, they appropriate the ideas of the people they've thrown out or the groups they've thrown out. So that, you know, a few days ago, Rich Lowry, who may be one of the greatest plagiarists in history, had something on the Stupid Party, which had clearly been taken from Sam Francis. But he never would acknowledge Francis. He seems to also plagiarize that entire column from me, which almost the identical column had appeared on the American conservative website 24 hours earlier. So this is a common strategy, plundering the people on the right whom they're excluding, but at the same time maintaining good relations with the center left. And it's basically, as I say, a strategy of triangulation. You kick out one side of the debate, but then you try to take over some of their ideas while trying to ingratiate yourself with the center-left. Hence the eagerness of Fox News to have, leftists on their program, including leftists, who identify themselves with Black Lives Matter and the anti-fascist. They would not invite us onto their program. At the same time, they will represent some of our ideas. So they've been pursuing this strategy, I think, for probably the last 30 to 40 years, maybe longer. What's happening now is it doesn't work anymore. And this is one of the happy signs of our time, even if the left is consolidating its power and the left becomes crazier and more totalitarian every day. The triangulating conservative movement, I think, God willing, will fall apart. Because there's no way they can contain their left wing, which I think is the dominant wing, which is now going crazy, attacking Trump as a neo-Nazi, attacking Breitbart, attacking anyone who notices that the anti-fascist left had something to do with the riot in Charlottesville. And then there are other people, you know, I suppose more centrist conservatives like Tucker Carlson and others who do seem to be aware. Said even Ben Shapiro and Guy Benson, who I hardly consider to be, you know, right-wing stalwarts, who seem to be aware that there are problems, and problems with the left, and the anti-fascist left may, in fact, be much more dangerous than the white nationalists, which I think is indeed the case. So I'm not sure that this triangulation can go on much longer. It's very clear that, you know, I'm reading the New York Post every day, that they sound exactly like the hysterical left what happened at Charlottesville. The major enemy is white nationalism and the alt-right, and we are to treat these things as, you know, greater threats to our democracy than ISIS. I heard somebody say this, someone from the Weekly Standard on Julie Banderas' interview show on Sunday night on Fox. So it's going to be very hard, I think, to maintain stability. The piece that came out yesterday by Rich Lowry, which basically seconded the NAACP and called for the removal and junking of all Confederate statues in the United States, Confederate memorial statues. I mean, this kind of thing may be a bit too much, even for the average geriatric, you know, viewer of Fox News or subscriber to National Review. I think they may have gone too far, these people, in trying to accommodate the left.
Well, we can hope. I mean, there's so many responses I want to make here. First, I want to talk about trying to judge the relative severity of the problem of the Antifa left and the white nationalist right, because we're supposed to, if I am going by the newspapers, I'm supposed to be really, really worried about a march with 400 to 500 people. I mean, I'm supposed to be worried about that.
Mm-hmm,
but
mm-hmm.
But those people, here's why I'm not worried about it. Those people are vastly outnumbered by the left. Vast, to the point where they're not even a speck of dust
right. Floating
in the air.
Right.
Secondly, they have zero sympathy in the entertainment world, mm-hmm. in the academic world, mm-hmm. in the media, mm-hmm. in popular culture. Mm-hmm. No one in his right mind who wants to keep his job would even say they had the right to have the march. So they have nothing to build on. Whereas the left has every privilege. The Antifa group is being portrayed now as heroic folks who just simply, they're just innocently opposing racism and bigotry. That is the way Mitt Romney expressly described them in a tweet the other day. John McCain the same way. These are just people who are against bigotry and racism.
Right.
You'd have to have an IQ of 53 to think that's the depth of the issue there. So either that or you're a member of the Republican Party, either one, but that's insane that you would have that. So that's why people might want to know, well, why don't you denounce these people more? I don't see that this is a big deal. I really don't think they're a big deal. What traction are they going to get? I understand that they're on social media and they're influential there. And I do understand also when they say, look, the conservative movement sure hasn't accomplished anything, so they have no right to lecture us about not having specific accomplishments. I get that. The conservative movement hasn't accomplished anything except raising a lot of money for the purpose of sitting around and doing nothing. I grant them that. But what are they going to accomplish when all is said and done? I don't see what the path forward is.
No, I totally agree. In fact, I wrote a piece for the American Conservative website this morning making exactly this point that, you know, however obnoxious the neo-Nazis are, they're not at the point of taking over the United States. They have nothing like the power and traction of the anti-fascist left. And, you know, we have to be realistic about, you know, which totalitarian group is likely to take over. And right now, the anti-fascist left and the cultural Marxist left, as I call them, are taking over every Western democracy. They run the media, they run the educational establishment, they run the deep states. The other side has been, you know, totally marginalized. So, you know, if we're sort of looking at the balance of power, the white nationalists and the neo-Nazis have none. They have no power.
I'm going to direct people. Maybe I'll have Keith Preston on, but I'm definitely going to link on the show notes page to this is episode 977, tomwoods.com/977, to
right.
Keith Preston's analysis, which I'm going to send you after we finish.
Okay, that's fine.
Because if people just want to get a good sense of the whole Charlottesville thing, he's got some really good reflections on it.
Mm-hmm.
What I find also disturbing now is that we've started to see this in the past year, but it is accelerating faster than you can believe. The use in the old days, if you strayed a bit from conventional opinion, even if you wanted enterprise zones in the inner cities,
mm-hmm.
you were called a racist. Right? That was the best thing they had, was racist.
Right.
Now it's you're a white supremacist, and they are throwing the word Nazi around all over the place. And
right.
in fact, the other
right.
day, and I told you this before we went on, but I had Patrick Schumacher on, who's a big architect in England, runs a huge firm there,
mm-hmm.
and He's being compared to the Nazis for being opposed to urban planning when the Nazis favored urban planning. So the facts
right.
of the matter don't even count. They're just simply trying to destroy people with this language.
Yeah. Well, which, by the way, they took over from the communists. I mean, this is one might say successful transmission of a Marxist-Leninist tradition. This is exactly what the East German government would do. No matter what you said, you were a Nazi. And we do the same thing. In some respects, of course, the cultural Marxist left, which I think is the great danger in Western countries, is different from traditional Marxism, a point I've made in a number of books. But it also builds on the totalitarian tradition created by other revolutionary lefts. And here I think you can see the continuity of tradition most clearly evident in these the practice of calling anyone who disagrees with you a Nazi, or and now they're also anti-Semites, right? This is another term we picked up from the communist and pro-communist left in Europe. Obviously, if you are against gay marriage, you're also an anti-Semite, even though gay relations are explicitly condemned in Hebrew scripture, but that doesn't seem to make any difference.
And meanwhile, we've got a group of libertarians beating their breasts who've composed a petition, and people who haven't found out about this should be on my email list because I already wrote about this, but they've compiled a petition trying to show that, look, libertarians aren't fascists, everybody, and we just want to separate or distance ourselves from the people in Charlottesville. And I thought, how pathetic to degrade yourself in that way. If you are, see, part of this problem is these people base their libertarianism on, you know, flighty nothingness. But if you're based in the non-aggression principle, it's obvious you have nothing to do with fascism. It's an insult to be asked to sign a petition like that.
Right.
But beyond that, you can sign all the petitions you want. That's not going to save you. As soon as you say, I'm against Obamacare, you're already practically a Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no point in trying to appease people of bad will,
right.
and certainly not to degrade yourself in the process. So forget that. And so meanwhile, we've got the head of the Libertarian Party, the chairman of the Libertarian Party, who I shouldn't mention is also a used car salesman, and just in case that happens to be relevant to the story.
He sounds like a Republican.
Yeah, no kidding. Is spending his time attacking me and even attacking Bob Murphy, who's about as inoffensive as you could ask for, because
mm-hmm.
we
mm-hmm.
won't sign their stupid petition. We're not Nazis. Of course we're not Nazis. What kind of an IQ would you have to think libertarians were Nazis?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're dealing with people who can't get that, stop dealing with them.
Yeah.
They're hopeless.
Yeah. But they're very much concerned with approval from the left.
Absolutely. They're obsessed with it.
It's the same as the conservative movement.
Yeah. Yeah. They're obsessed with it.
They only worry about a left flank. You know, they worry about a right flank. They want to exclude the right. But they're hypersensitive about offending the left.
Now, Paul, let's talk about terminology, because
mm-hmm.
you and I did an episode on the alt-right.
Right.
And here's the big problem with the terminology. When Richard Spencer uses the term alt-right, he means his group
mm-hmm.
is the alt-right.
Yeah.
And so anybody who's just outside the official boundaries of the conservative movement doesn't count as alt-right. The white nationalist folks, those are the alt-right.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when other people use the term, when you say Breitbart is alt-right,
yes.
Breitbart, unless you're a hysteric, is obviously, whatever their faults, is not white nationalist.
Right.
So But if the media is going to adopt Spencer's terminology, then alt-right, there's a lot of confusion created because you think, oh, then I guess Breitbart must be white nationalist and want to have torchlit processions. And therefore, I guess anybody, you know, Paul Gottfried must be this way. And anybody who's just a dissenter is therefore because we have a small tent definition of alt-right, a larger tent definition, which just simply means people who hate the conservative movement, which is 99% of the human race. And because there's no clarification on that, then you can't even have a rational discussion, because then if alt-right is viewed on the one hand as being this big umbrella group, but then some people interpret it as just being the torchbearers, then it smears everybody.
Well, I think there's a deliberate deception that's going on. When Ms. Torrens, who is an editor of Weekly Standard, appears on Fox News and says that, you know, Trump should compare the alt-right or treat the alt-right the way he treats ISIS, she knows that the alt-right includes people like us, or, you know, we are simply, by which we understand the independent right, which is often lumped together with the alt-right. What this is an attempt to do is to go after everybody to the right of the Weekly Standard by saying they're all part of the alt-right, and alt-right means Nazi. You know, I think many of the people who are saying we have to condemn the alt-right, and, you know, John Podoretz, when he says this, they understand that, you know, their real target is the independent right. It's anyone who despises their conservative movement and, you know, is a taft Republican, whatever, you know, all those people are alt-right now. And, you know, this is simply a strategy of isolating further everybody on their right by associating them through the alt-right term with Nazism.
Precisely. That is exactly what I was... took me 5.5 minutes to try to say. That's exactly
right.
That's exactly what I was driving at. Mm-hmm. And this is what they've been dreaming of forever.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's think about the practical results of this. It becomes difficult in this toxic environment to be somebody who's outspoken, who's outside the conservative movement, because simply by definition, if you're inside the conservative movement, you probably are secretly a Nazi.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're outside the conservative movement, well, you're definitely a Nazi.
Right.
And people have jobs to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
And given that you can be called a Nazi for favoring an urban policy that is the 100% diametric opposite of Hitler's,
yes.
don't think you're safe.
Yes.
By the truth is no defense here.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it very difficult. Now, I'm lucky because people can criticize me for not signing a juvenile petition.
Right.
It doesn't affect me at all because I have no boss I have to answer to. I just have to answer to people who listen to the show, and most of them, thankfully, have IQs above 50. So
yes.
I don't worry about it. It's no problem.
Yes.
But the average guy could get in trouble.
Well, there is what I say a kind of fallback position, which is cultural conservatism, which has become increasingly vacuous, you know, over the decades. So now you read a cultural conservative website, there's some vapid gibberish about permanent things or values, which are never defined very clearly.
No, no. Exactly.
Like, if we believe in the permanent things, what the hell are the permanent things? You know, well, Russell Kirk liked permanent things. So, I mean, as long as you do that, you're safe.
Oh, yeah, because nobody's going to care. Or if you want to dredge up Richard Weaver's
right.
argument over universals, you know, and the nominalists in the 14th century or something, they have no care about that.
Because they fall asleep while they're reading, you know, your analysis. I mean, they provide you with soporific text, you know, which nobody is interested in. They say, well, we're real conservatives, you know, we're concerned about. I see these websites popping up every day that, you know, that call themselves cultural conservative and are exactly like that.
Well, now,
you know,
look, I don't want to disparage the idea of doing scholarly work that may be a bit removed from current controversies, because that is what a scholar does. But on the other hand...
No, I agree.
I want to give an example. The other day, I was reading an article by somebody who was tutting the right about certain things, and he's one of these sort of permanent things conservatives, and I looked
right.
at his bio.
Yeah.
He's currently at work on a book on Neoplatonic magic in the poetry of Edmund Spencer. And I thought, well, no one's going to bother you.
That's right.
There's nobody's coming after you for that. So you are safe.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, there are people who take these sort of innocuous positions, too. And I don't want to mention them by name, but there's one who, I will mention by name, Ron Dreher, I've never been able to find anything particularly right-wing about his writing or anything of very much substance. But he usually takes positions that are not likely to bring down the wrath of the left, you know, on the person who expresses these ideas. And after a while, you know, I think, as I said, I agree people should be allowed to discuss it, you know, discuss things that are not immediately relevant to our political situation. But my problem with some of the people who do this is they're neither addressing politics nor scholarship. You know, they're sort of in some kind of zone in between in which they feel safe. And they don't really contribute much in terms of research information, nor are they taking any kind of courageous political stand. And there are a lot of people out there who do this. And I think Ross Dudat did that for a while. You know, he posed as some kind of Catholic conservative, although it's hard to say what he was conservative about. And then he went to work for the New York Times, you know, and has sort of moved to the left. But I think this this pretense that, you know, you're above it all, you're above politics, but at the same time you're going to be a critic of the conservative movement, which is vulgar and insensitive or something like that, I think it's a totally dishonest posture.
So now it seems to me the people, the only people on the right I'm interested in talking to are inside a very narrow band of people. It's basically you and about a dozen other people, and we're all going to be at the Mencken Club thing or the Mises Institute or whatever. So, but otherwise, and then meanwhile, the narrow definition of the alt-right. If I were having an event, now look, I don't know anything about having events, right? I mean, so I've never organized them, right? I'm just looking at this from an outside observer.
Right.
I would say you just can't have any kind of symbolism or regalia that would call to mind Nazi Germany. You know, that would be, I would say, qualification number one. And if I see people doing that, I would say, sorry, this is an American movement. We're not importing foreign symbols. Remember, we're for America.
Right.
You know, I would try and play it that way. But that the idea that because you got the attention of a lot of Americans, that this is a victory, what people will remember are that there were people who don't shy away from that kind of stuff, or that when you ask the leaders of the group, they can't bring themselves to repudiate it. They say, oh, this is a distraction, or you know, World War II was a long time ago, or whatever. They can't even say, look, that's just dumb. I mean, apart from the wickedness of it, it's also strategically dumb, and so we repudiate it. They can't even say a simple thing like that, or do you repudiate Hitler? Now, normally, I think it's stupid to be asked questions like this, but on that one, I would say, well, who doesn't? But they can't answer that question. That's weird to me. That's a problem.
I agree.
And what does that have to do with I mean, what does that have to do with the right as it has existed in America? And what does that have to do with an American right? This is some foreign import.
Yes.
Right? I thought they were against those.
No, I totally agree. And I think this is one of the problems with the white supremacists, white nationalists. They're not just white nationalists. Many of them have sympathy for the Third Reich. I think this is what makes them particularly toxic. You know, of course, we're going to be linked to them, you know, by virtue of disagreeing with the conservative movement. But, you know, sort of speaking among ourselves, you know, I think what they're doing is stupid and toxic.
Yeah, and I think that for a long time, there might have been people in the media who would have at least been curious. They wouldn't want to put us on their TV shows, but they've been curious about people who disagree with the conservative movement. But now they feel like we've neutered the conservative movement completely. We have nothing to worry about them. So now let's just go and cut off at the knees anybody who's outside it, and then we'll just have people who talk about Neoplatonic magic in the poetry of Edmund Spencer, and we've got what we want.
Or why conservative marriage is a family tradition, or strengthens family values. I've heard so-called conservatives make that kind of argument. You know, it's really daring argument. They're really taking on the left. But you know, the sheer the combination of pretense and cowardice, you know, is absolutely insufferable. You know, when you hear some of these conservatives on Fox News, you know, taking positions that are supposed to be edgy, but really fit in with the left's agenda.
Yeah, Trump got in trouble for the one, you know, one of the sensible things he said. He said that if, I mean, there's no debate, whether you want all the statues down or not, there's no debating that logically, if you want to take a Robert E. Lee statue down,
George Washington is next.
George Washington is next. I mean, what is the? How's that even debatable? And on Twitter, you've got all these people saying, oh, he compared, and I have to do my effeminate voice because who else would talk this way?
Right.
He says, he compared Robert E. Lee to George Washington. Okay, first of all, number one, he actually didn't. All he was saying was, if you do this to one, you're going to do the same thing to the other. But secondly, so did JFK. You know, and in fact, you can find beyond that quite a bit of praise for Robert E. Lee from pretty much every president going back to FDR.
Right,
I mean,
right.
We have pictures of Jimmy Carter happily standing in front of the Confederate battle flag. That's
right,
Jimmy Carter. You cannot keep up with these people.
No, but like George Washington, Robert E. Lee in 1862 freed his slaves and was never, you know, he was always critical of the institution of slavery, inherited slaves from his wife and treated them very well, then freed them. Washington didn't do anything like that. So, you know, Lee should be less reprehensible than Washington if we're going to, you know, if we're going to tear down statues of people who are not politically correct. No, I think it's just a matter of time before Jefferson and Washington also go. And then we'll probably have something by Lowry saying that they would have wanted us to do this because they were ashamed of slavery or should have been ashamed of it.
Right, right. Now, I wonder, when do the Martin Luther King statues come down because he opposed gay marriage? How long is that going to take?
Well, I have a colleague at Elizabethtown College who wrote a book, a fellow named Michael Long, who's a left-wing Methodist minister, showing that if Martin Luther King were alive today, he'd be marching in gay parades. You know, he just died too soon. He was killed by a white racist. But if he were alive, he'd be, you know, in favor of transgendered bathrooms, whatever. So what you could do is say, you know, if these people live long enough, if Lincoln lived long enough, you know, he would be present at a gay marriage. This is another tactic that the left uses. It tries to show if people, it argues that if people had lived long enough, they would have, you know, they would have awakened to the beauties and truth of the most advanced leftist social program that's now been introduced. So they've done this with, there's a book on this, you know, showing how King would have evolved, you know, toward gay marriage if he had lived long enough.
Well, of course, if he hadn't, they would have destroyed him. So sure, maybe
yes,
he
they
might.
Would.
Who
they
knows?
They would.
Who knows? All right. So let's talk about, I'm sorry, I don't mean to make this self-referential here, but right now I've got a bunch of people coming after me on social media, you know, because I've interviewed an unsavory character or two over the course of the show, or, you know, years ago when these people were rather different from how they are now. But secondly, that I won't sign the petition, and they can find a picture of me from 25 years ago when I had a lot more hair. Sporting an 80s haircut into the 1990s is the most embarrassing thing. But it's a picture of me in front of some Confederate battle flags. And so to me, the embarrassing part of the picture is my hair. It's just horrible. Why did I think this was a good idea? And so that's all they've got. And I think, geez, if over 25 years, the only bad things I've done is interviewed one unpopular guy and then had a picture taken in front of those flags and not signed a petition, I've been really lame, and I'm disappointed in myself that that's all they can come up with. I'm going to have to turn up the dial a bit here, turn it all the way up to 11 or something.
Right. No, you're absolutely right.
Well, anyway, let's finish by saying something about the H.L. Mencken Club meeting. I'm going to have that linked at tomwoods.com/events coming up very shortly. My events page, by the way, for anybody checking it out, I have my coding guy is doing a little work on it because it's a little screwy, but you can still get the details. Just be aware that if you go to the Mencken Club meeting, there's going to be some unapproved opinions there. And if that's too much for you, you shouldn't go. Just shouldn't go. So tell us about it.
Well, one of the people who will be voicing unapproved opinions is Tom Wood.
Yes, indeed. That is my way of saying to the world, well, I was going to say something vulgar, but it's my way of saying to the world, I don't care what you say about me. I just don't.
We also have a panel on the alt-right in which we discuss it critically, but we'll treat it, you know, as a serious political force rather than as a collection of neo-Nazis who are on the verge of taking over America. One of our speakers, curiously enough, is somebody who was the manager of the Daily Caller for many years, and I assume sort of comes out of Conservatism Inc. or Conservatism Incorporated, but is, you know, is willing to speak for us and very happy to do this on Saturday night. But we do have some excellent speakers. This is not like a gathering of, you know, Heritage Foundation employees.
Oh my gosh, no!
And people, it'll be a much more open kind of a dialectic or discourse that will be encouraging.
That is a very good way to put it. So I will link to that at tomwoods.com/977.
Right.
Do you have? Although once the event passes, if people go to that page, I won't have the link up anymore. But anyway, do you know offhand the website?
Mary, what is our website? We do have a website. In fact,
I've got it. I just found it.
Okay, fine.
Okay.
And you can register there. And whoever's interested in coming, I would urge him or her to do this in the very near future, since we already have over 60 people. And we're 3 months away from the event.
All right, so
it will be a large turnout.
Right. Okay, so that is going to be big, and a lot of very smart people. Not the fluff produce. I don't know what to call the people who are coming after me.
Well, I like Buchanan's term. The kennel fed conservatives will not be there.
They will not. The website is hlmenkenclub.org.
Right.
And this is going to be November 3rd to 4th.
November 3rd
in
to 4th.
Baltimore. Yeah, in Baltimore. So mm-hmm. We hope to see everybody there. And by the way, it only occurred to me later that, of course, Baltimore is where, I'm sorry, I know this should have been obvious, is where Mencken is from.
Absolutely. That's
Duh.
Why we're the H.L. Mencken Club. We don't meet in the city, but we meet near Baltimore.
Near Baltimore. Yeah, of course. Right. You have to have some standards. So,
right.
All right. Well, anyway, I'm looking forward to that, and thanks for the conversation today.
Okay. Thank you for having me on.
All right. If I can get Keith Preston, try and get him on for tomorrow. I can't be sure of that, but Keith Preston, if you can hear me, I need to get you on the show. He's got a great piece on Charlottesville that I think is reasonable in the way it treats everybody involved. There's no whitewashing of anything, and there's no hysteria. There's just cold, rational analysis, which is what we could certainly use a lot more of. So I'd love to get Keith back on. So I'm going to do my best. I don't know if it'll be tomorrow, but if I can get a hold of that guy, we're going to get him on sometime soon. Thanks for listening.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.